Hello and welcome to the D.
An A of Home Interiors, the podcast which is all about empowering you to make confident interior and furnishing decisions for your home. I'm Audrey, founder of Audrey Whelan Interior Design.
And I'm Deirdre, founder of youfurnish.com, search 100 plus furniture retailers on one website. The DNA of Home Interiors is proudly sponsored by checkatrade.com. If you need help with your next home improvement project, you can search from over 39,000 recommended, vetted, and monitored trades on checkatrade.com.
So today in the podcast, Deirdre and I are talking all about reupholstering furniture rather than buying new or versus buying new. So this is something that crops up a lot in my discussions with clients, where there might be a sofa or an armchair that's, you know, been in the home for a long time, let's say, and it's quite worn, and a discussion will start about whether it's worth reupholstering this sofa or chair or whether it would be a better option to buy a new one. And one of the reasons why I thought it'd be good to discuss this on the podcast is because often I find the conversation will start with the assumption that it's going to be a lot more cost effective to reupholster it than to buy new. But the reality is that that is rarely the case. So I would say, you know, I have gotten hundreds of reupholstery quotes for people that haven't gone ahead because, you know, it's just me wanting to show obviously what that cost would be, but it just doesn't make sense financially in the end for people. So there's got to be other reasons aside from a pure kind of financial decision as to whether you're going to reupholster or not. So Deirdre and I were going to chat through what these reasons might be and also why is it expensive? There are very good reasons, you know, behind this. So first of all, Deirdre, have you ever reupholstered anything?
I haven't. Now, I'm going to start off with a really basic question, Audrey, and I feel a bit stupid asking this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways because that's what I do. Is it just sofas and chairs when we talk about upholstery? Now, they're the two items. There's nothing else that you can reupholster.
No. There's loads. So there could be headboards. There could be dining chairs, you know, seats on dining chairs or dining chairs that are fully reupholstered. Yes, stools. There could be ottomans, footstools. There could be like built-in kind of banquette seating, say, in a dining area. So obviously, if it's something built-in, then it was kind of upholstered probably as a custom item in the beginning. So if you want to keep it, then it's probably your only avenue. But the specific point around the comparison between old and new, I guess, is more applicable to kind of freestanding items which haven't been kind of built in situ. So whether to sort of take them off to an upholsterer, have them reupholstered and get them back in the home versus sort of passing them on and getting something new delivered.
Yeah, no, everything you've said makes complete sense. I just hadn't thought about headboards and all these other items.
Yeah.
So when I said I haven't, but actually my parents have. So we have a dining table and 8 chairs, and we have reupholstered the seats of all of those chairs. So I was interested to sort of hear your thoughts around, most people think, oh, let's reupholster it because it will be cheaper. I suppose the rationale for driving reupholstering our dining table and chairs is that it's a set. So you're not just going to get new chairs. Those chairs are no longer in production. They're probably more verging on antique at this stage. They're beautiful dark wood chairs. And just the bounce had gone out of them. You'd sit down and it'd be very hard underneath of years and years of usage. But if I take that was sort of, you know, you've got your set and you can't get replacements, what are the reasons, the other reasons outside of cost that people actually then do go for reupholstery?
So I suppose, you know, if it's like, a bit like what you mentioned, something which is a piece of furniture of high value anyway, and that could be like a high cost value, as in it's an antique. So, you know, money-wise, then it does actually make sense to reupholster it because it would be more expensive to replace, or it's part of like the set where you're not going to replace the whole thing. But the other value that could be attached to it is more like emotional. emotional or sentimental value. So where maybe it's an heirloom that's been in the family for a long time. So it's almost just out of the question that it would be replaced, but it's worn down so much. So it does need to be reupholstered. But, you know, that as part of that conversation, it could still be a surprise that it's going to cost the amount it's going to cost to do. But then otherwise, other reasons, I would say more and more so over recent years, I've seen people wanting to do it from a sustainability point of view. And often this isn't even a piece of furniture that they currently own, but it's that they're interested in buying a vintage piece. So it might be something on eBay, you know, that they actually managed to buy quite cheaply for sort of what it is. But knowing that then they will have to, first of all, just kind of investigate the cost of the reupholstery, labor charge, and the fabric that they want to use, and make sure that overall, you know, they're going to be able to kind of, you know, carry out that project within their budget. So that's something I see quite a lot. And I think, you know, that's such a great way then to get a really personalized piece of furniture as the end result, because you can choose your fabric, and it might be something you're buying that you're going to stain or paint or do something with the frame, if it's, say, like a, you know, a wooden rocking chair or something like that. So you can really personalize it.
Now, speaking of material, Audrey, we had the amazing Jules Hinds on as a podcast guest, and she deals with fabric waste and using that from the industry for repurposing. So how many people, and the reason I ask is because I remember there was a particularly beautiful, really deep blue fabric that she had with really bright fishes on it. And I just thought, oh my God, that would make a beautiful lampshade in a kid's room or a kid's cushion or something like that. How many people fall in love with the material potentially? Or does that happen? And then they're like, okay, I want to reupholster it because I just love this material so much. I need to use it, or I need that material in my home.
That's quite a common thing to happen. So I would often have conversations with people then where, say, that has happened and there's a fabric they love, and then it might be that we end up getting quotes to reupholster a sofa, possibly also a chair. But, you know, it may be that then, depending on budget and the cost of that fabric, you know, they end up going with a chair rather than the sofa because, you know, they're trying to kind of make it work to what they can spend. But then what also unfortunately happens sometimes is that people fall in love with a fabric, and maybe even cost is no object. But then in our discussions, when they show me the fabric, I discover that actually the fabric isn't suitable for upholstery. So there's some fabrics that are, you know, fine for curtains and maybe like loose scatter cushions, but they're just not strong enough for upholstery, where the wear and tear of somebody constantly sitting down and leaning back, you know, against that chair or sofa, it would wear out so quickly. So it would just be, you know, a real waste of money to use it. Now, the way that you can tell, so I'd recommend that people do this before kind of totally falling in love with something, check first if you've got your heart set on using it. And so the thing to check or ask for is, what is the Martindale grade on the fabric? So it's often called the Martindale rub test, because essentially it is a test that's done in a factory on the fabric of literally how many rubs does it take of like a person sitting on it or touching it before it starts to fray and fail. So, you know, you'll find that the fabrics that are only suited for curtains or loose cushions, they tend to be 10,000 rubs or less. So that means after 10,000 rubs on a chair, they would start to deteriorate. So 10,000 might sound like a lot, but it's not if you've got a whole family of people sitting on it several times a day. So then we move on to sort of between 10,000 and 15,000 is what we call light domestic. So like, I've upholstered, I must admit, a chair several years ago in light domestic fabric in my house, because I absolutely loved the fabric and it just worked with everything. But it's a Parker Knoll rocking chair, which I did buy on eBay. And I made a decision that I love this fabric so much. And, you know, for years, I kind of threw a blanket on it when my kids kids were tiny. And it's the kind of chair in the room, there's two sofas with it, so people don't tend to sit on it that much. So kind of for us, it's more of a almost decorative piece in the room. But I think it's so important to consider that if it's not going to be that and you need it as part of your core seating, then it's just too stressful, in my opinion, to then do it in something where you're constantly going to be sort of telling people not to sit on it or worried about it. So the more sensible thing would be to go up a notch from there at least. So you've got like 15,000 to 25,000 is like what we call general domestic. So loads and loads of fabrics fall into that category of general domestic upholstery.
What would that general domestic, that 15 to 25K, what sort of lifespan is that for a usage of, let's say, a family of two parents and two kids? So 10 years, five years? What does it translate to?
I'd say that's a good number of years. I mean, it really does depend, because some people just do wear down their furniture so much quicker than others. I was actually checking before our recording today. I thought, because we have sofas, which I like specced, you know, I had made especially and selected the fabric, and it's a very common fabric. It's a Romo Lenara fabric. It's used on like all the big sofa brands would use it. And I just thought to myself, gosh, I can't remember off the top of my head what the Martindale grade is on that fabric. So I looked it up and it's actually 36,000. So like the next category to what I mentioned, general domestic, 25 to 30,000 is what we call heavy duty. So then 30,000 or more is commercial grade. So that's what you would start to see like in hotels and offices and places where, you know, the wear and tear is much, much higher. So although this fabric on our sofas is very much used in domestic settings, it's got that really high rating, and that fabric is, well, the sofas are almost 10 years old. So as a benchmark there, I mean, that fabric's still going fine. The issue with it actually would be more to do with fading from sunlight, but that's another kind of subject matter. On the lower grades, that could be a combination of issues actually, where the sun could then deteriorate it further. But this one has stayed strong. So, I mean, going back to your question then on that kind of mid-range fabric, the general domestic, I mean, for some people that could be maybe 6 or 7 years. And then for others, it could be a lot more if they're not sort of, you know, pouncing on it every day kind of. And also putting throws on top of sofas and chairs, you know, is obviously a really, really good way to prolong the fabric. Yeah. But then if you love the fabric and you don't want to cover it up, obviously, yeah, that's just a decision then that you've got to kind of got to make.
No, that's really amazing. So I suppose I've got a much clearer understanding of why people upholster and the Martindale rub test in terms of that durability of the material. So I suppose knowing what we know now about materials and we've got something we need to upholster, my next question is, where do you actually go to find materials for covering your sofa, for example?
Yeah, so I mean, you can buy materials online, or you can buy them in, you know, lots of department stores. Like, for example, John Lewis have an absolutely huge range of fabrics. So I guess, you know, some people might have been used to kind of going into a department store like that and sort of browsing through. But then, you know, now so many of the big brands that you would see in department stores, so brands like Romo, Sanderson, Harlequin, which, you know, some people might know of some of those names, and they generally all have samples available online. So you can actually order some samples. So you can look at the full range, pick out some you think, you know, you would like, and look at them that way.
And will they have the Martindale rub test?
Yes. Yeah.
They will. Okay. Yeah. So that's common. So it makes it really easy for somebody.
Yeah. Even on the website, even before you get those samples. So when you're looking at each fabric on the website, on any of those big fabric brands, they will always have, they'll have like a number of things itemized, like the width of the fabric and the composition. Is it linen, cotton, polyester? What's in it? You know, and then also the Martindale test. So you'll get that number. If it was, you know, maybe a smaller fabric supplier or something, or they didn't have as comprehensive a website, you know, I mean, it's got to be a known figure, if you like. So it's always worth asking the supplier if it's not a readily available piece of information.
quick shout out for our sponsor, checkatrade.com. Search recommended tradespeople online with checkatrade.com.
And the other thing I would say then is a huge consideration around the fabric choice and also just, you know, the behind the scenes of like why upholstery costs what it does is there's a lot of regulation like in the UK and well in every country really, but each one sort of has its own specific rules around fire regulation and fire regulation compliance when it comes to upholstery. So that's not just the fabric, that's all the foam and everything inside as well. So in a lot of cases, everything would need to be replaced if it's quite an old piece of furniture. There's a website at the Furniture Industry Research Association, which is FIRA.co.uk, I presume, I think.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. And on there, you can actually read, you know, if it's something you want to know more about, you can read all about the UK fire regulation compliance. So, you know, for example, there's things detailed in there. If the upholsterer is supplying all the fabric and materials, everything must comply. If you're supplying it, there's some kind of what I would almost see as loopholes. It doesn't necessarily have to, but I would just always say to people, no matter what you do, always make it compliant. It's just not worth the risk. You know, there's reasons why these safety measures are in place. So obviously, you know, and lots of upholsterers I've worked with would feel exactly the same way. So if the foam needed to be replaced because it wasn't compliant, even if it felt comfortable enough, you know, that would be cost then that's being factored in, and rightly so, I would think. So whereas often people just think of reupholstery as just literally that fabric, top and nothing else. And so the other thing to mention around the fire compliance is like the fire treatment of fabrics. So most fabrics are not FR treated, so fire retardancy treated, when you buy them. So there are companies then who will treat them. Some suppliers will treat it as an add-on option. So if you're using it in a domestic setting for just scatter cushions or curtains, for example, it doesn't need to be fire treated, but by regulation for upholstery, it does. So that's an additional cost then per meter that gets added on to the fabric that you're purchasing. And then in certain cases where it might not be possible to fire treat the fabric, the upholsterer by law will have to actually make what's called an interliner then, which sits between the foam and the fabric. And that has that gives a fire retardancy then to the finished item, because nothing can pass through the fabric to the foam in terms of, you know, the fire. So obviously that is very costly then, because essentially they're making a whole other, they're upholstering it twice in essence with that interliner. So it's good to sort of know and appreciate these things when it comes to reviewing, you know, the cost that you might get for reupholstering something.
Yeah. So you've got the cost of your material, you're going in and you're finding it in a store, such as a John Lewis as an example. And then potentially you have to pay to get that for your fire retardant, or if it's not possible to get the fire retardant, there could be the interliner put in. Now, you spoke about the foam. I assume, and you might correct me, that the foam will actually be sourced by your upholsterer. Is that correct? Or do you need to also buy the foam?
No, so in most cases, and it's how I would generally work, that the foam would be supplied by the upholsterer, and therefore the upholsterer would be certifying that it is compliant with current regulations. Obviously, if there was a reason why an individual wanted to supply their own foam, then, you know, they'd need to have that conversation with the particular upholsterer. Some upholsterers might only want to supply their own, and there might be certain types they like to work with. But, you know, there's still a whole range of options when it comes to the filling in your sofa or chair. So, you know, whether you're supplying it or the upholsterer is, there would still be those decisions to be made around how firm you wanted the seat to be and the back. And so, you know, there's foam, but then there's also other fillings that you get on sofas sometimes, you know.
And I presume your upholsterer will give you advice on that. For example, I'm assuming the type of foam and the firmness that you need, you know, that could be impacted by you know, for example, the weight of the person as well that's using that chair. Yeah. So a light person probably might not need as durable a foam as potentially a more full-bodied person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a great idea to sit on different options. So I know before when I've been speccing different upholstery options, we have had the facility to be able to sit on different types of foam or see things that the upholsterer has made or reupholstered, you know, in the various options and kind of try them out and see, because, you know, there's the comfort factor and the size of the person, like you mentioned, but then there's also the kind of the sort of day-to-day kind of maintenance, if you like, you know, with the sofa, if you've got really kind of squishy fillings on your sofa seats, you do need to take them off regularly and kind of shake them up, you know, and sort of Well, there is a word for it. I don't know.
Puff them up.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then if you've got other fillings, we've got a filling called Duratec in our sofas. So that's really, really good at just never needing that. So that was really important to me because I just thought I don't want to be kind of faffing around with that every day. But then for other people, they love the sinking in feeling of it. So to have to kind of, you know, fluff it up then is maybe a small kind of effort versus, you know, how they like it to feel. So it's like with so many of these things, you think, oh, the foam is the easy bit, but you know, you've selected your fabric, then you get into the next bit and you're like, oh my gosh, please don't tell me I've got to decide.
Your upholsterer will be able to hold your hand, and they'll have done it a million times, and they'll know the consideration and what's good. So speaking of the upholsterer, where do you find these people? How do you find somebody that's got the appropriate skill? What questions should you be asking of them?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, I actually find getting upholstery quotes like one of the easiest quotes to get out of anything
so
I get involved
Audrey, because
with.
I've never done it myself, I've literally no idea where I'd even begin to go to get a quote.
Yes. Okay. So like literally, I mean, I wanted to investigate getting a chair upholstered here yesterday and I didn't actually know any upholsterers. So I just looked up the most local one to me just on Google and found them, and they're in like the neighboring village. So I sent them an email and I sent them like three photographs of the chair in question. So quite an old chair. And I sent them sort of, you know, one from the front, slightly angled so they could see the depth of it, one from the back slightly angled, you know, again so they can kind of see the depth in the back, and then one from the top because it's got a very circular kind of top which you wouldn't necessarily appreciate from those side-on views. So I sent the three photos and I said I'd like to get a quote for reupholstering this chair, and I said the dimensions are approximately like 70 centimeters deep by 70 centimeters wide by 90 centimeters high, and sent the photo. So they came back to me on the same day. I said I would supply my own fabric. They came back to me with a price then to reupholster that chair.
So that's really interesting.
Sorry, I should note as well, just important to say, the useful thing about giving the dimensions as well is getting the quantity of fabric. So they gave me the price, the labor cost for them to do it, but then also the amount of meters of fabric I would need. So at least then if I select a fabric, I can add the two together or decide, do I need to go for a lower fabric?
And you probably need a bit more fabric when you wrap it underneath as well than necessarily just the diameter of the chair in that example.
Yeah, well, they work that out. So I always like to kind of pass on that decision to the person making it for them to take the responsibility for the quantity, not me say, oh, I've got 5 meters. Can you manage to squeeze it out of that? You know, and they say, oh, I'm not sure, you know. Yeah. So let them say what they need to work with.
So in that example, so really interesting, we know how to find an upholsterer. Like, what sort of DD do you do on the person to see? Have they done it before? Are they capable? Will they do a good job? Do they actually comply with the fire regulations?
Yeah.
What sort of, how should somebody assess that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the bit I didn't say was, when I did Google them, I mean, I did look on their website, looked at past projects and, you know, found them on Instagram as well. In this case, I actually found on Instagram that they were working with they were doing some big kind of commercial work here as well in hotels and places I recognize. So I thought, okay, that gives me a certain, you know, sense of, but they're still open to just small individual one-off projects as well. So I didn't know that when I first saw the business name. So just a little bit of research online, hopefully with most businesses, you know, that's kind of gives you a good kind of starting point and indication. Now, I will say, though, there's definitely upholsterers out there, including upholsterers who I used for a long time in London, who are absolutely amazing, who didn't really have that kind of online presence so much in the earlier years. Because, you know, they're just such a traditional business. They relied so much on word of mouth, and they did do big contracts, but they didn't have like a social media person posting out their end results online. That wasn't what they needed to generate, you know, the next project. So, you know, I'd say important probably if somebody is like a traditional business like that, not to obviously rule them out, because you can't instantly find, you know, anything to give you that credibility. But, you know, phone them up and have a conversation and ask, and no doubt they will have things they can send you or places they can tell you they've done work in that you can go and look. So always worth investigating, especially if it's, you know, local, because obviously it's like a physical object that needs to be transported to and from. So, you know, unlike certain other things you might mind purchasing from further away, but the more local a business like that is to you, you know, just the easier overall it's going to be on the logistics side, especially if it's a large sofa or something.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we've touched on cost and sort of you have to pay for the foam, you have to pay for the fire retardant, the interliner, the time and materials. But is there a rough gauge? And obviously every project will differ, so this is a bit of a tough maybe question. But like, if it is one cheer, like the example that you've just given, you know, how much should somebody think about that? Is it 100, 200 pounds? You're probably going to come back and tell me it's 500. I don't even know. Or like, you know, a two-seater sofa, like a standard enough sofa, like is that, and you often said people are surprised by the cost because they think it's more cheaply. So I was going to throw out £1,000 for the sofa, but then I'm thinking, wait, that's the price of a new one. And it's probably more expensive. But, you know, ballpark.
Yeah. So on a chair,
I mean, range.
On a chair, I would say, I mean, the chair yesterday, you know, the quote was €450 that is now to reupholster. But
so it was,
you know,
way off.
You know, and that's without the fabric. That's without the fabric. And so because the upholstery is quite complex and the shape but the curve is quite complex, it would actually need 6.5 meters of fabric. So when you think, you know, the fabric I mentioned on my sofa that I love, it's plain fabric, but really it has that durability. It has the high Martindale rub test. I mean, that fabric is, I mean, when I bought it 10 years ago, it was like 30 something a meter. I mean, it's probably a bit more now, but let's even call it 30 a meter. And then you need 6.5 meters of that. You're definitely the mathematician out of us. So you can work that one out. But so 6.5 times 30 on top of your 400-ish, say, for the labour cost. So you are looking
at... You probably wouldn't have much change out of 600.
Yeah, so that's it. And that's a chair. Now, I would say there's kind of a slight economy of scale on these things in that if it's a sofa, you know, and it needs like... instead of 6.5 meters, if it needed, let's just say 13, as in exactly double, I wouldn't expect the upholstery cost to be double the 450, just because, you know, they're factoring in sort of picking it up, dropping it back. You know, there's certain things that
don't
change.
But with your chair, if that was a set of 6 chairs...
That would be, yeah. I mean, this is an armchair. So yeah, luckily it's not like sort of a dining chair that,
I was thinking when I throw out 100 to 200 pounds, I was thinking of a dining chair with a little round sort of.
Yes. I think I was going to say, because when you talked about your parents' chairs, I did remember a couple of years ago, I did have a set of like antique dining chairs reupholstered.
They're a
for
big
somebody
chair.
In London.
Like, it's and a big square thing. And then there's the detail as well, because they've got the little, I don't know what you call it. I want to call it like a ribbon around the edge, some sort of like piping.
Oh, yes. It is piping. Yeah.
Piping,
Yeah, I love, I mean, you know, you
the can detail
do
is beautiful.
Thing. Yeah, you can do amazing things with piping if you want to make something look kind of more quirky or contemporary, where you can put, you know, a contrasting colour of piping on it.
So it's not, when I say piping, I'm thinking of a thin line, but this is actually, it's nearly like a fabric that you get on a roll. You might see it on a blind as well.
Oh, I know, it's called...
it's about the width of your fingernail.
Is it called ticking or something? I think it might be. It's got a word.
I don't know. I can picture it
but
now.
I know.
It's a detailed, it's not just a thin strip yeah. of something. It's yeah. actually, yeah. you know, like a friendship bracelet actually that you used to make as a kid.
Yes.
It's like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, well, there's all these trimmings and things that you can
trimming,
buy,
yeah,
yeah, to put around these things. Because actually the piping, that's another thing that can shock people sometimes, where, you know, there might be an existing item that has piping and then we get the quote and the quote is like so high because when you factor in the fabric involved for piping, you need to actually cut the fabric on the bias, which anybody who does dressmaking will know about, kind of on the bias where you actually cut it diagonally. So you need a massive amount of meterage to cut your piping, you see. So it'll bump up the cost, you know, way more yeah. than you'd imagine. So often I've had, you know, people who then decide to reupholster it without piping because, you know, just it's prohibitive cost-wise, you know, with the piping. But then I think all the more reason, you know, make it a feature if you can, if you're going to do it. And same with buttons on things, you know, if there's buttons in the upholstery and you want a more sort of quirky or contemporary yeah. look, you can do the buttons in a different colour.
I suppose it's that little bits of the creativity that comes in. You don't necessarily see them in the ready-to-go market
yeah.
with, you know,
yeah.
the tassels or the fringing.
Yeah.
So we had fringing on a chair, one of our chairs, and I remember as a kid just playing with it around the bottom of the chair, the fringing, like, so yeah. I think they look really beautiful.
Yeah.
But if we detract from all the decorative elements, yeah. so you've said 450 maybe for a chair could be something yeah. like that, probably cheaper if it's a dining chair rather than
yes.
the armchair.
Oh yeah, yeah, a lot
and
cheaper.
And then for,
yeah.
so for two-seater sofa, what would maybe your range be?
Well, I'd say, ballpark. Yeah, you could easily be looking at 600 upwards then for the labour cost. And then your fabric, you know, it could be like 10 metres of fabric or something.
So it's potentially not more expensive than buying a new sofa then?
Yeah, potentially not. Yeah, it might be the same cost. But yeah, it really depends what it is you're looking at as a new sofa and what you're looking at fabric wise. So obviously, if it's 10 metres of fabric at £30, you know, okay, if it's 10 metres at £80, you know, so yeah
fabric that can be quite expensive.
That can really fluctuate. I suppose as well, you know, that feeling that like if you are doing it and you want to make it kind of special to you, then obviously you don't feel like you're having to go with something really boring fabric wise just to keep the price down, maybe, you know,
if you're going to all the effort,
defeating parts of the object, you know, of doing it in the first place. But yeah, and of course, then sometimes, you know, it's just not even a consideration for people because part of the idea of upgrading the sofa is that, you know, that particular style, it's maybe bought for a previous home and it's not particularly ideal in the current home. It, you know, they'd rather have an L shape rather than two individuals yeah. or something. And, you know, yeah. then obviously it's an easier decision. But I do think when it fits the space and when you're still happy with the style, or like the shape and size of it, then I think it's, you know, really good if possible to be able to do it and, you know, not have to throw it away.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of things. And it's also something that you've sort of feel like you've created
yeah.
Yourself. So you get that little bit of probably a personal ego boost in terms of yeah. I created that or I was part yeah. of creating it,
yes.
which is always a
yeah.
good feeling.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, Audrey, yeah. I have learned so much around upholstery and I do feel like I'd be so much more equipped to go out and actually undertake a project. So thank you for sharing all of those insights today.
If you enjoyed our podcast, we would be delighted if you could rate, review and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. This will help others who are seeking home and furnishing advice and inspiration discover the DNA of home interiors. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and Twitter at the DNA of Home Interiors.
If you are looking for inspiration and help in designing your home interiors, take a look at Audrey Whelan's masterclasses on audreywhelan.com/events. And don't forget to check out youfurnish.com, a search and comparison website which helps connect people with amazing furniture from over 100 retailers. We designed it to solve the problem we and thousands like us faced furnishing our homes. And now we are really excited that everyone can search, discover, compare and shop for their home all in one place.
Thank you to our sponsor, checkatrade.com, for their support in bringing this episode to you. And most importantly, thank you all for listening today.
We hope you can join us next time.